Hello and welcome to East Valley News. I'm your volunteer reader, Dan Kaplan, and today we're focusing on news from the towns of Mesa and Apache Junction. Our first story, three new projects in the East Valley, from Flora and Decor to Blue Sushi Sake Grill. Commercial developments are underway in the East Valley, many of which will bring much-awaited projects to the area. As the area grows, new development will replace aging buildings and fill in spaces that have long been empty. Some include a new community center, retail, and popular dining destinations. Here's a few projects currently being built in the East Valley. Developers of a 9-acre patch of dirt at the north entrance of Gilbert's Heritage District promise a dynamic mix of restaurants, retail, and residential projects at the project dubbed Heritage Park. Phase 1 of the project calls for 30,000 square feet of retail and a 288 multifamily apartment complex, according to the developer's leasing brochure. It also calls for a 17,500 square foot public courtyard. Restaurants Palma, Ghost Donkey, and Blue Sushi Sake Grill poised to open at Heritage Park. Announcements on additional tenants are expected in the coming months, and Phase 1 of the project is expected to finish mid-2026. Along the Loop 202 in Cooper Road, a floor and decor store is under construction. The Atlanta-based home improvement warehouse specialty retailer focuses on hard surface flooring like tile, vinyl, wood, and stone. The floor and decor building is one of two buildings on a 13-acre site within the larger Chandler Airport Center. The company has not announced an opening date yet for the store. The fate of the site that was previously home to the former Tonalea Elementary School in Scottsdale is underway. The lot is being transformed into a multi-purpose recreational, athletic, and community project, according to Scottsdale Unified School District. The site proposal shows 8 sand volleyball courts will be built, plus a basketball court and soccer field. The Tonalea Elementary School in South Scottsdale shut down at the end of 2014 because of low enrollment and its age. Community meetings started back up in 2020 to determine what should be made of the former school site. And that story was three new projects in the East Valley, from Flora and Decor to Blue Sushi Sake Grill. The next story, Genesis Project hosting open house to celebrate its new space in Apache Junction. Genesis Project, a soup kitchen feeding, clothing, and hydrating the hungry and homeless of Apache Junction, recently opened at a new location and is celebrating the change with a grand opening event Tuesday. The event is 11 a.m. to 2 p.m. at Epiphany Lutheran Church, 1050 West Superstition Boulevard, and is to include vendors, resources, giveaways, food, fun, festivities, and friendship, according to a flyer. The faith-based nonprofit Genesis Project was notified via a July 31, 2024 letter affixed to the front door of the property owner had decided to not renew its lease at 564 North Idaho Road, and the organization needed to vacate by 5 p.m. October 31st. Go to https://genesisprojectaz.org. That story was Genesis Project hosting open house to celebrate its new space in Apache Junction. The next story, She Was a Bright Light. Pandora Colesrud, 18, found dead off State Route 87 in Arizona. Deputies responding in the early hours of May 27 to a call for service near Mount Ord off State Route 87 discovered two bodies. Mount Ord is east of State Route 87, just beyond Sunflower, on the drive from Mesa to Payson. The Maricopa County Sheriff's Office said both were teenagers and their deaths were being investigated as homicides. One of the deceased was Pandora Colesrud, 18. The other was a 17-year-old minor who officials declined to name. At this time, the circumstances surrounding their deaths are being treated as suspicious, read a May 30 Sheriff's Office statement. The Sheriff's Office asked anyone with information about the case to call 602-876-TIPS, 602-876-8477. Our focus is on conducting a comprehensive and meticulous investigation to ensure justice for the victims and their loved ones, read a sheriff's office statement from May 29. We are coordinating closely with our law enforcement partners and ask for patience and respect for the investigative process while we work through the facts. On May 30, the sheriff's office said that both Colesrud and the 17-year-old died of gunshot wounds. Simone Colesrud said her beloved daughter was a friend to many in a message to the Arizona Republic on May 30. She was a bright light in this world who loved every single person she met and had a very unique ability to make every person feel special and loved, Simone Colesrud said. She lived life in a big way and was always up for an adventure. Simone Colesrud said that her daughter enjoyed playing the violin and cello and was an outdoors enthusiast. She said her daughter's favorite place was Camelback Mountain. A GoFundMe page was set up by a friend of the Colesrud family to support them with funeral expenses. This fundraiser is being organized to allow Pandora's family to grieve the unimaginable loss of their daughter without worry of financial burden, the website said. All funds raised will be deposited directly into an account accessible only by Pandora's mother and father, ensuring that every contribution goes to supporting them during this incredibly difficult time. There will be a community memorial to come, the site said. Pandora Colesrud attended Arcadia High School, her mother said. The principal Arcadia High School, located on Indian School Road near 44th Street in Phoenix, sent a letter to parents on the morning of May 29 about a pair of student deaths. It is with great sadness that I share the heartbreaking news. The two of our students have tragically passed away, read the letter from Principal Janelle Dansky. Naturally, this death within our community impacts many of our staff, students, and families. A spokesperson provided the letter to the Arizona Republic without confirming the 17-year-old found with Colesrud was a student at the school. That story was She Was a Bright Light, Pandora Colesrud, 18, found dead off State Route 87 in Arizona. The next story, daytime lane restriction closures on U.S. 60 between Superior and Miami. The Arizona Department of Transportation advises drivers to plan for restrictions for blasting operations as part of a bridge replacement project. U.S. Highway 60 east of Superior between mileposts 227 and 229 will be reduced to one lane with alternating east and westbound travel from 5:30 a.m. to 5 p.m. Monday, June 2. Flaggers and a pilot car will assist drivers through the work zone. U.S. 60 between Superior and Miami, milepost 227 to 243, will be closed from 9 a.m. to 2 p.m. Tuesday, June 3, Wednesday, June 4, and Thursday, June 5. Flagging operations will be in effect before and after the full closures. U.S. 60 between Miami and Magma Mine Road, mileposts 231 to 243, will remain open for local traffic only. Detour. Eastbound U.S. 60 drivers use southbound State Route 177 through Winkelman to northbound State Route 77. Westbound U.S. 60 drivers use southbound State Route 77 through Winkelman to northbound State Route 177. Due to the roughly 75-mile length of this detour, drivers may want to consider planning travel before 9 a.m. and after 2 p.m. The detour is estimated to add an additional hour for trips between Superior and Miami. Upcoming full closures and flagging operations. U.S. 60 east of Superior will be reduced to one lane, with alternating east and westbound travel from 5:30 a.m. to 5 p.m., Monday, June 9. Flaggers and a pilot car will assist drivers through the work zone. U.S. 60 between Superior and Miami will be closed from 9 a.m. to 2 p.m. Tuesday, June 10, Wednesday, June 11, and Thursday, June 12. Flagging operations will be in effect before and after the full closures. That story was daytime lane restriction closures on U.S. 60 between Superior and Miami. The next story, Mesa teacher investigated after college drama students stripped. What to know? Mesa Community College students raised concerns to administrators for months about theater program director Mace Archer, saying he touched them inappropriately, flirted openly, and steered their performances into uncomfortable sensuality. Incidents occurred so frequently, some students created and shared a document among themselves to record Archer's conduct. At least one woman had complained to administrators in February, who responded in emails by promising to look into the learning objectives of acting and stage courses. Then, as part of the midterm exam, students said Archer encouraged some women to undress on stage as part of a required exercise exploring vulnerability, while the rest of the class was made to watch. Three women stripped, two down to their underwear, while another removed all of her clothes, according to students. Here's what to know. Archer was hired as co-director of theater at Mesa Community College in 2021. Before that, he was the play director at the University of Tennessee, an assistant professor at Randolph College in Virginia, and an artistic director at Mount Hood Community College. He also directed several plays at Arizona Broadway Theater from 2008 to 2014. Archer did not respond to interview requests. The point of the midterm risk assignment was not to get naked, student Gabrielle Monroe said. The point was to face fear. But Archer made it about taking off clothes for some women in the class, she and other students said. Monroe said she was one of about 16 students in Archer's second-level acting class who met at the college's Black Box Theater for midterm performances testing the limits of personal fear. Archer positioned himself in the middle of the theater, the director's seat where he often evaluated auditions, Monroe said. The other students scattered among the remaining seats. Attendance was mandatory. As their classmates watched, students one by one emerged on stage. The order was predetermined. Some sang, some danced. Some gave soul-searing monologues built on personal trauma. Three undressed, Monroe said. On the first day, two women stripped down to their underwear. The person who got naked was on the second day, she said. We all knew what to expect. The performer didn't utter a syllable as she methodically took off her clothes, folded them on a chair, and then removed her underwear under the glow of the stage lights, Monroe said. Then she put on a robe. It was over in minutes. She was just silent. She just took her clothes off, Monroe said. People were kind of shocked, but it was silent. No music, no talking, nothing. Archer had explained the risk exercise in class and talked about how women have taken off their clothes for assignments in the past, Monroe said. Archer's class discussions were not sexually aggressive or even suggestive, Monroe said. He discussed various ways to complete the exercise, of which undressing was just one example, she said. We were supposed to do something that made us uncomfortable, Monroe said, adding there were some key rules. We couldn't harm ourselves, we couldn't harm others, and we couldn't harm the space. Archer met with students individually to assess their ideas for the risk assignment. Monroe said the way Archer treated some women made her uncomfortable, but he never tried to pressure her into undressing. It was mostly the younger teenage girls in class, Monroe said. I have heard from other women that their initial idea was not enough of a fear or risk, and he suggested that they remove articles of clothing. College officials confirmed Archer was under investigation and would not be allowed to return to the classroom until the inquiry was complete. They said the college launched a formal investigation in March upon receiving concerns. College officials would not answer questions about whether encouraging students to undress in an acting class or being made to watch was an explicit policy violation. Rules prohibit any unwelcome conduct that a reasonable person would find so severe, pervasive, and objectively offensive that it denies a person equal educational access. Administrators for Maricopa Community Colleges, the district that includes Mesa Community College, declined interview requests. Because this is an active personnel matter, we cannot provide specific details to protect the privacy of those involved, spokesperson Lindsay Wilson said in a May 19 email. Our colleges take any allegations of misconduct seriously and are committed to fostering a safe, respectful, and supportive environment for students, faculty, and staff. Wilson promised appropriate action would be taken based on the investigation's outcome. Archer was listed as an instructor in the fall semester catalog students were using in mid-May to enroll in his classes. After the Arizona Republic, azcentral.com, inquired about his inclusion, the catalog on May 23 had changed and listed the instructor as staff. That story was ASA teacher investigated after a college drama student stripped what to know. You're listening to East Valley News on Sun Sounds of Arizona. I'm your volunteer reader, Dan Kaplan, and today we're focusing on news from the towns of Mesa and Apache Junction. The next story, planned 336-unit rental communities CUP appeal to go before Apache Junction Council. A 336-unit, three-story residential rental complex proposed for 18 acres west of the northwest corner of Idaho Road and Apache Trail in Apache Junction has drawn criticism from neighbors around the proposal and a rejection from the Planning Commission. An appeal of the Apache Junction Planning and Zoning Commission's denial of a conditional use permit for the development was submitted April 24 by Paul Gilbert of Gilbert Bliley PLLC on behalf of Wolf Enterprises III LLC. The appeal will be considered at the June 17 City Council meeting, Apache Junction Public Information Officer Gina Scorza said. The meeting begins at 7 p.m. June 17 in the Council Chambers, 300 East Superstition Boulevard. The Apache Junction Planning and Zoning Commission held a public hearing April 8 and overwhelmingly voted to not approve a conditional use permit for the development requested by Wolf Enterprises III LLC, represented by Gilbert Bliley PLLC. A motion to approve the permit, made by Commissioner Jesse Gage, with 8 conditions of approval and seconded by Chair David Hanchey, failed 2-5. Dissenting were Vice Chair Robin Barker and Commissioners Sandra Mikeland, Ari Callan, Roy Starr, and Cheryl Bigelow. "I'm overwhelmed with the problem of traffic, so I need to vote no," Barker said in voting. With the failure of the motion, the case can be appealed to the City Council within 20 days, Development Services Director Rudy Esquivia said after the vote. "Otherwise, if nobody appeals in 20 days, your decision stands," he said. 11 local residents and winter residents spoke during a public hearing about the development, with most saying they live at Lost Dutchman RV Resort, 400 North Plaza Drive, which is just west of the proposed development. Concerns included traffic, bottlenecks of vehicles at the two entrances, the fear of having several families living in one unit, the traffic from the nearby U.S. Post Office, the loss of views of the mountain dropping the value of homes at the RV resort, questioning where trucks will travel for construction of the development, where school bus stops will be located to transport children living there, and the need for bicycle safety. The property is zoned City Center, or B3, and the proposed multifamily use is consistent with the existing general plan land use designation. City staff support the proposed multifamily use at the site, Principal Planner Kelsey Shatnick told the commission. A 60-foot-tall building is allowed in that zoning, and the project is at 37 feet, 5 inches in height, she said. 14 three-story buildings are planned. Amenities include a clubhouse, pool, dog park, open space, grills, and covered parking. All lighting is to be dark skies compliant, Shatnick said. The main access is off Apache Trail, and a secondary access for residents only is off of Plaza Drive. Units will consist of 1 and 2 bedrooms and range in size from 750 square feet to just over 1,000 square feet. As you can see, the applicant is providing 3 building types, each with their own unique architectural details, which include balconies on the upper floors and first-floor screened patios, Shatnick said. The applicant is requesting a parking reduction. Per city code, 749 on-site spaces are required, with the applicant proposing a total of 684. The applicant is providing 45 off-site parking stalls within 100 feet of the property along Plaza Drive, she said. Primary concerns from five individuals who called the city about the project include planned off-site parking along Plaza, blocked views of the Superstition Mountains because of the planned building heights, and increased traffic along Plaza, Shatnick said. Historical aerials show the property may have been used as a golf course in the 1970s and 1980s, but has not been used since that time, according to a written project narrative from Wolf Enterprises 3 LLC. It will be a market-rate, non-age-restricted product. The development is anticipated to generate 2,265 weekday daily trips entering and exiting its states. The Wolf Company is under contract to purchase the property, attorney Paul Gilbert, representing Wolf Company, told the commission. We openly state we don't own the property. We have it in escrow subject to getting it entitled here at Apache Junction, he said. One-bedroom units are to cost $1,300 a month, and two-bedroom units are to cost $1,800 a month, he said. And we're very comfortable that that rental rate can be sustained here in Apache Junction, Gilbert said. Bigelow asked if a traffic light was to be constructed at the entrance along Apache Trail. When you come out of there to cross the trail to get to Idaho, that could be congested sometimes. Like, are you going to put a light or something over there? She asked. Gilbert said it would not need a traffic light. But we've traveled it several times and have watched the traffic. We did it again today, and we don't think that will be a significant factor, he said. I know I sat there long enough trying to cross the trail to get to Idaho, Bigelow said. The primary duties of the Planning and Zoning Commission include community contact regarding items, including a zoning change request to an application from a developer for a shopping center development or housing project. Also included are conditional use permits, with the final decision being handled at the Planning and Zoning Commission level, according to the city's website. That story was Plan 336-unit Rental Communities Cup Appeal to go before Apache Junction Council. The next story, former operators of troubled Mesa Sports Complex plead guilty to fraud. The father and son who opened Legacy Park, conceived as a youth sports wonderland in the desert in East Mesa, pleaded guilty on May 28 to federal charges of creating false documents to sell the project to investors. Randy Miller and his son Chad Miller pleaded guilty before a magistrate judge in a New York courtroom of two counts. One was securities fraud for making false and misleading statements to investors about how well the park would perform and how the Millers would use bond proceeds. The second count was for aggravated identity theft. The Millers admitted to forging documents that were used to promote the project to investors. In the indictment, prosecutors said an unnamed co-conspirator said he helped the Millers create phony letters of intent from sports organizations. The indictment quotes from emails between Chad Miller talking about the letters, which prosecutors said were doctored with inflated numbers about events planned for Legacy Park. According to the U.S. Attorney's Office for the Southern District of New York, the Millers face a maximum sentence of 5 years in prison on the securities fraud count. They also face a mandatory 2-year sentence for the identity theft charge. Those 2 years, a news release said, must be served after the sentence on the first charge. Along with the guilty pleas, Randy Miller was ordered to pay more than $7.2 million. Chad Miller was ordered to pay more than $4.7 million. Both were set for sentencing on August 26. The venue went into bankruptcy, causing bondholders to lose all but $2.5 million of the $284 million invested. It sold for one-tenth of its construction costs and now operates under new ownership and a new name, Arizona Athletic Grounds. Attorneys for the Millers could not immediately be reached for comment. The Millers were charged April 1st by prosecutors in the Southern District of New York, the U.S. Attorney's Office known for handling financial fraud crimes. Randy Miller had conceived of the project since at least 1990. It sprung from weekends spent shepherding his kids to various sports events all across the city, sometimes splitting duties with his former wife. Miller thought of a facility with baseball and softball fields, basketball courts, and sand courts for volleyball. Parents could have one kid at a gymnastics meet and another at a soccer tournament and be at one venue, with a bar and grill in the middle to relax between games. The projects were planned in fits and starts. At times, it was set to be located in Tempe, Chandler, and North Phoenix. Randy Miller was accused in court records of bilking people out of their money. He also fell victim to suspected fraudsters himself. Randy Miller filed for bankruptcy twice, court records show. Randy Miller found an avenue to fund the park through the Arizona Industrial Development Authority. That authority, created by Governor Doug Ducey, issued $282 million in bonds for the project with minimal discussion. Because the bonds were issued by a government authority, the investors who bought them didn't have to pay taxes on the proceeds. That meant they could agree to receive a lower interest payment, giving the project a break on its cost. The Arizona Industrial Development Authority had lent such support to several large projects, some of them out of state. Those included a prison in Hawaii, a Hilton Garden Inn in Harlingen, Texas, and a resort in Puerto Rico. Four of the projects it approved, including Legacy Park, went into default. The authority had operated in relative obscurity until the Republic published a story on its activities in 2021. In May 2023, Governor Katie Hobbs instituted new guidelines for projects approved by the Arizona Industrial Development Authority. That included a focus on affordable housing and renewable energy projects, not sports parks. Included in a thick stack of documents sent to investors were letters from anticipated customers of the park. The indictment said the Millers, along with the unnamed co-conspirator, would take actual letters from the entities and doctor them. In truth, prosecutors said, a volleyball club had no intention to move its operations to Legacy Park. The organization hosting events for disabled athletes did not generate as much revenue as the fake letter suggested, the indictment said. Same with the performance coaching company. In a June 2020 email quoted in the indictment, Chad Miller told the co-conspirator, here are a few more consent to assign forms that need your special touch, LOL. The Securities and Exchange Commission also filed an action against the Millers on April 1st. That civil complaint named Jeffrey De La Viaga, the park's former chief operating officer. That complaint asked the court to order the men to disgorge all ill-gotten gains from the deal. After the bonds were issued, the indictment said, the Millers enriched themselves. Chad Miller used bond monies to buy a Cadillac Escalade. Randy Miller used $400,000 to buy a home, the indictment said. The park opened in January 2022 on long vacant land that used to hold the track that General Motors used to test cars in the desert heat. Although the facility was often crowded on weekends, it kept bleeding dollars each month, filling spreadsheets with red ink. Legacy Cares, the nonprofit created to operate the park and facilitate obtaining the funds, filed for bankruptcy protection in May 2023. That story was former operators of Troubled Mesa Sports Complex plead guilty to fraud. This has been East Valley News covering Mesa and Apache Junction. I'm your volunteer reader, Dan Kaplan. Remember, if you miss a show, you can get it on demand at sunsounds.org. You can also take SunSounds with you with our On Demand and our SunSounds of Arizona app for Apple and Android phones, and you can hear SunSounds on your Echo Dot or smart home device. Stay tuned for more excellent content on SunSounds of Arizona.